Medium Talk.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of Medium Talk with Rod. And I'm on, you know, the Blackout Tips Premium Network for all the people that like to pay for podcasts and keep me employed and stuff like that. I appreciate y'all. I have a very special lady here, somebody that we got an email one day and it was like, hey, check this out. And it was Chilltown TV. And I was like, I never heard of this, but I'm gonna check it out. And we get so many emails and requests for people to be on the show. It was like taking forever for me to even get time to look at some of it. And then I remember kind of bookmarking and like, yeah, I think I do want to talk to this person. Let me, you know, and it took like a month to watch it. And I got back to her and it took like a month after that. And it took like a month after that because, you know, people get busy and stuff. People, you know, lost my job in the meantime. I started monetizing the podcast, but the whole time I had my eye on the prize and I said, I would like to interview this lady at one point. It's Lisa Dean, who is the, now if I'm correct, creator and writer and does some of the voice work, and animator for, yes. Chilltown TV.
Yes, I do it all.
Oh man!
I don't do all of the voices. But I do everything else.
Well, you're a woman of many talents. Just from looking at a couple of episodes. My wife's favorite is Lily's Ratchet Advice.
Thank you.
That was the thing that we were in the studio one day after the show, and I was like, this person wrote us, and I'm thinking about interviewing them. I'd like to get them on the show. And she was like, okay. And I started just playing Lily's Ratchet Advice in the background. And all of a sudden, she was like laughing. She was identifying with this. And I was like, okay, that means it's good. Because she's not only just laughing, but she's identifying with the dating advice. And it's like, that dude is not a keeper. So,
well, thank you.
No problem. Now, Lisa, where all can people find you on these here internets?
Everybody can find me at chilltowntv.com. That's chilltowntv.com. And there are links to everything there. But directly, you can also find everything at YouTube. We're at youtube.com/chilltowntv. And on Facebook, you can come and like us there. It's facebook.com/chilltowntv and on Twitter at twitter.com/chilltowntv. And we're also on Instagram.
Wow. You know, it's really good when people are good at branding because, like, you can tell, like, when something kind of unexpectedly became a love of someone's life, because the first thing will be like, yeah, find us at cctv.com and then find us at this and then find us at that. But when you get it one thing, like just put in Chilltown TV anywhere and we will pop up.
Right. And I initially had to do that because there are a couple of shows, but the main show is Chilltown and Lele's Ratchet Advice is a spinoff of Chilltown. And initially I wanted to call everything just Chilltown, and the name was taken, and I looked and saw who it was, and it was these two Hawaiian DJs who were not like, you know, they were like old school DJs who played at like weddings and bar mitzvahs in Hawaii. And they had the name Chilltown. I was like, oh my God, the Hawaiian DJs beat me to it. And they had the name Chilltown, and then they were on YouTube also. And so I was like, oh my gosh. And so, I decided to rebrand everything as Chilltown TV because it is, you know, it's all web TV in any case. So I figured that was something that was more memorable, and I wanted to have that name every place. So everybody, you know, that's all you got to remember.
Yeah, smart, man. Now, how did you, I guess, first of all, you're a self-taught animator. Like, what does that exactly mean? Like, how did you teach yourself how to animate?
Well, I'm primarily a writer. I sold a couple of series to a couple of networks, to Hollywood production companies, places like that, and I never had anything get on the air, so I became very frustrated. I felt that I was just spinning my wheels career-wise. And so I decided probably an insane move on my part, but I decided, let me just teach myself how to animate and do my shows, because everything I had written was, all the shows I had written were adult animation, meaning like South Park type stuff, that, you know, animation that's kind of irreverent. And I didn't realize exactly how tough it would be. So what I did was I did it all from the internet. There were a couple of websites that had tutorials that were like $10 a piece, and I downloaded those. I taught myself by learning how to do it by just following the tutorials, as well as buying a couple of books and then just figuring out things myself. And it took me a really long time. It took me 5 years to do altogether. I completed 140 minutes of animation complete, like, all by myself. Wow. I did take off some time in the middle of it, because in the middle of it my mom got sick, and I was helping her out, and she passed away, and so I had to, you know, deal with that and everything. So I took off some time during it, but in all it was about 5 years from deciding to do it to finishing it.
Well, first of all, my condolences about your mother.
Thank you. Thank you.
Second of all, it's funny too when you try to learn something like that on your own, because like I feel like all great success stories and all great adventures start with a little bit of insanity. So I've kind of learned to create my website through trial and error, just messing around and teaching myself. I didn't, you know, Google is very helpful for people that
absolutely
don't understand, like, you know, when I had a corporate job, people would call the IT department and be like, this thing isn't working. And, you know, that's the extent of most people's technology, understanding, is I'll call the IT department and they will help me. They'll teach me how to unplug and plug my computer back in. But when I, you know, was at home, there's no IT department to call. So it's like, I need to sit here and I'm going to have to figure out how to move this thing to this part of my website. I'm going to have to figure out, you know, how to add this feature and whatnot. So when you got the instruction guide, how helpful was it exactly? Like, what did you find it to be like, oh, this is very easy to understand? Or did you find it to be like, they just barely gave me the tools, and a lot of this is going to be trial and error?
There was a lot of trial and error. They did give tools, but there was a lot of trial and error. I found it just like you said. I found Google invaluable. I found YouTube invaluable, and I found message boards invaluable, because I just started subscribing to a bunch of animation message boards, and I found people who were doing the same thing I was doing, and I grilled them. I would put queries up, hey guys, how do you do this? How do you do that? And I would get answers in a quicker or in a way that was spelled out a little bit easier to understand than some of the tutorials. And some of the tutorials just didn't go into enough depth for me for certain things. For example, and this is getting kind of technical, so you can stop me whenever you want.
No, go ahead. If I don't understand it, someone does.
Okay. Well, there's a thing called the comp system, which I had never heard of, and in animation. And the type of animation that I did is called limited animation, meaning I didn't hand draw every single image one by one, but what I would do is construct a character and then deconstruct them. So that, like, if you can envision a full cartoon character and then you take apart their arms, and they and each part of their arms can independently move, like the upper, the lower, and the hand can independently move, the feet can move. So you can kind of maneuver them and pose them like a mannequin. There's a thing called the comp system that's used for lip syncing, because I was like, how in the world do I lip sync? How do I do it? And there was a tutorial on that, and it explained it. And what I did was I took it a step further. What the comp system does is I used a program called Adobe Flash, and you would create, like, you would draw the head, and the head would be a symbol, and you would click inside, and then you would draw, like, different poses for the lips to move. So, for example, there would be seven different poses representing different syllables, and, you know, it's phonetics, the way people pronounce words and stuff. I just took it to, like, way beyond that. I took it so that it wasn't just for the head posing and one facial expression. I did over 400 or 500 poses, so that way I wouldn't have to constantly redraw things, and it simplified things for me. So it was a lot of work initially, But then after it was done, it made it a lot easier to do. So that way when I was animating the face moving, they could have, like, the expressions of the character's face, the eyebrows could go up and down when they were shocked, or they would go lower when they were angry. And there was just, was able to express more movement in the face. And that was something that I kind of figured out myself, but I took, like, the germ of that idea from one of these tutorials.
Wow. Yeah, that a lot of times you have to take the tools and customize it to your own needs. Now, what, right. How long did it take you to do the first episode of Chill Town TV?
Well, that's an interesting question. Actually, the first episode took me about 3 months to do. And that doesn't sound like very much time, but in preparation for it, what I did was I completely drew all the characters. I drew over 200 characters because Chilltown has a number of main characters, but a lot of secondary characters. And I also have a couple of other shows that I did, and I drew all the characters for that as well. And that included all the whole comp system thing that I explained with all the facial expressions, as well as what there I had all the main characters, and any character that was going to be walking, I did walk cycles. So I had already instances of them walking, so I wouldn't have to animate that. So that was all pre-done, and all of that took a year to do. Wow. I also did all the background art, and that took me, you know, roughly about half a year to do, because I did about 300-400 pieces of background art that was, you know, hand-done. And wow. So I had all of that assembled, and once all of that was assembled, it took me about 3 months to do my first episode, because I was kind of just figuring out, I was making mistakes, and I knew I wanted to really take my time, just because I was teaching myself really how to do it. By the time I was on my fifth episode, I was knocking everything out in about 6 weeks.
Ah, okay. Yeah, that's what I was going to ask, was what was the turnaround time by the time you really got your groove? Mm-hmm. Going. Now you also have to have, like, all these voice actors come in, right. I'm assuming, and do this. So how do you like working with, you know, voice actors and the talent and, you know, actors in general and stuff? Because you I'm assuming you write the episodes yourself.
I do, yeah. And I wrote everything myself, and I directed it, and I cast it. And it was just an incredible experience from beginning to end. I cast people who I worked with before, people who had done pilots with me before, who I knew were really talented, and some of them I even wrote, I had characters written just with them in mind. And I was just incredibly lucky that they wanted to do it and they were available to do it. And other people I reached out to, I kind of cold called online, just like Wilson Vince, who's a comedian. He did stuff like with Dave Chappelle and Chappelle's Show. He opens up for the Wayans brothers. He's, you know, does a lot of big things. And this was, you know, going back, you know, 5.5 years. So this is when MySpace was around. And I reached out to him. I just cold contacted him on MySpace. And I was like, hey, I love your voice. I'm doing a cartoon. Would you like to be involved? And he saw some of the art on my MySpace page. He said, I love your art. Yeah, I'd love to do it.
Wow.
And so I was just really lucky because I wasn't able to pay anybody hardly any money. I mean, they did it because they believed in it. And what I did was I had everybody come up to my apartment and record in my tiny little studio apartment, and because I couldn't afford to, you know, everything was done on the cheap because I didn't really have a budget at all. I didn't have a budget. And so people were just incredibly gracious and gave it their time, and I made sure that they didn't have to spend a huge amount of time. So the average person only spent about 2 hours here, which wasn't that terrible. And that was recording, you know, like for Chilltown, 9 episodes. They did every episode, one after the next, and I just read with them. They came separately, and I read the parts with them. I knew exactly what I wanted, so they were kind of doing it in the dark and just going with my direction, and the toughest thing for me was editing it. It took a really long time to edit it because I had to make everybody sound like they were in the same room together.
Yeah, I've actually done voice acting work Shadow Dog Productions. They do, like, audio plays and stuff. And we recorded the same way. We went to, like, a studio, but, like, in there, you know, there's, like, maybe your part, you're there, and maybe, like, one other person is there at the same time, or sometimes nobody. and you're reading kind of in the dark because you're, you know, like you're trying to get this vision for this person. And it's like, you know, I was a little bit nervous because I wanted to be successful and have this person feel like, oh, you nailed it, you know? And then at the same time, there's like a certain amount of, I think the more experience I got, like a certain amount of, me that I want to bring to, you know, like a certain amount of like, you know, I think this guy would talk like this. So I think, you know, I'm going to add this cadence to these and see if that works or if that helps. It is really different recording that way, because I think when you hear it at the end, you know, it sounds like everybody was there together and this is real smooth flow. But, you know, I just go back to being in an empty studio reading scripted with and looking at Dexter, the guy who wrote it, and being like, so is that right? Is that am I supposed to be angry here? What do you think?
Yeah, I would tell them immediately after every line. I'd say, that's great. That sounded great. You know, and every, after every little space, I would tell them, okay, that sounded great. That was perfect. Or, you know, or can you try and do it this way? And a lot of times I did sometimes 6 or 7 or 8 different takes on lines. It's not that they were done badly. They were just done differently. Right. So I would have things to choose from. And sometimes when I edited it, I would actually go in and take and just edit, literally put in a different word, because I realized, okay, well, I really want the inflection to be a little bit different, you know, just like kind of changing at the end. But I had the luxury of doing that because I had everybody do a number of different takes on things. So it was a great, great experience. I really enjoyed it a lot.
So have you always been in the creative industry, or have you ever had like a, you know, a square job, as people like to call them, you know, 9 to 5 working in a cubicle, and then this was like on the side or anything?
I've pretty much always been, I've been really lucky that I always, for the most part, almost entirely my entire life, I've been able to make a living creatively mostly. I have had a couple of times, I worked as a temp for a couple of years, and even doing this, I spent a little bit of time, you know, I was kind of living off of my savings and stuff, and then I spent a little bit of time working here and there as a temp. But I'd say 95% of my life, I've been fortunate that I've been able to make a living. I mean, it always hasn't been a great living, but it's been a living nonetheless from my art.
Do you always feel like pressure to have something picked up, to have like as you're writing this, like I also have to promote this thing? Do you have other people that you hire or that help you out with promotion, or is it just mostly you do the promotion part of this too?
I do the promotion myself. When I launched Chilltown, I did have somebody who helped me. This girl who was I guess technically an intern, who was a friend of a friend, and she just loved the project and she wanted to be involved and she wanted to get some credits under her belt because she had just left a job and she was looking to try and get actually into PR work and stuff. And so she helped me by going to message boards and, you know, and going on Facebook and posting about it and stuff. And it was really invaluable to have her. She was great. She was just, I was just very lucky to have somebody like that who worked for free for me. But then she ended up getting a job, so she couldn't do it anymore.
Isn't that always the way?
And the thing that, I mean, I was really happy about, I was happy that she got a job, and she got a job in part, it was a small part, but she used me as a reference, and I gave her such a glowing, I said, if you don't hire her, you're crazy. She is just incredible, and she, you know, she's responsible, and she's, and I just yada, 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 I just went on and on, because she is. But I mean, she obviously got the job because she was incredibly skilled, but also she got a great recommendation from me, so.
Okay. Now, how long have you been, you know, like animating, or not just animating, but like writing and, you say you've written pilots before that got picked up but didn't get, put on TV and whatnot. Like,
it didn't go into production, yeah.
Okay, so how long have you been doing that?
I've been doing that, for about 15 years, for a long time.
Wow, and what does it feel like, you know, that process? Because I think what a lot of people are just, they're kind of ignorant to the process, because it's like, well, this either is on TV or it's not, and there's no stages in between. There's no, you know, idea of, well, this pilot got picked up, but then it didn't get into production for whatever reason. Like, how does that process work for, I wrote something, I want to get it picked up, and like, and it gets picked up, and what happens if it does or doesn't make TV?
Well, first of all, it's incredibly difficult to sell a show to television. It's a very, very tough thing to do. I was incredibly lucky that that happened for me. And I think that part of the reason is because I had something that was just a little bit different, and so it was unusual, but that also was the thing that made it tougher to get it actually put into production.
Ah.
What happens from the moment you sell something, it really depends on the project. If it's a project that has a lot of celebrities involved and that comes in with an enormous amount of support and big production companies behind it and huge agents and things like that, then it usually normally, you know, they most, if it's a big television network, they go through a process where they go back and forth with rewrites, and then ultimately they film a pilot, and mm-hmm. then they ultimately they choose which pilots are gonna, you know, get on the air. They'll finance, let's say, 150 pilots, and then they'll choose like 7 of them or something like that.
A lot
of that is really changing because of everything that's happened on the internet, so it's a little bit different now. But like for me, I had like none of the above happen for me because I did not have big production companies in back of me. I did not have, you know, like huge celebrities. I just had myself and like a kind of a weird project or project. And I was just incredibly lucky that I was able to sell them to begin with. So what I kind of spelled out is the normal way things happen, but I think that things are really different now because of the internet, and because, you know, some shows on the internet, hugely financed shows on the internet, get more views than television shows do.
Yep.
Now. I mean, so I think that everything is really changing. So it's kind of a thrilling and scary time to be in.
Yeah.
As a creator.
Well, I mean, also like certain types of shows now are getting picked up. Like, I watched Adult Swim pretty much religiously.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we're kind of in an age where like a show can be 10 minutes long,
mm-hmm.
Completely animated, somewhat quote unquote nonsensical, if you know what I mean, as far as mm-hmm. compared to traditional television, and it can still find a niche mm-hmm. now. And I think that was something that when I was growing up, all of that stuff got relegated to like the to nowhere. Like there was, mm-hmm. you know, even some of the mainstream shows on like a Cartoon Network, like Adventure Time, is just a 10-minute show that's really silly and stuff, but it's, you know, people love it. Adults and kids love that show. Now I know your stuff is a bit more adult oriented. So do you like get inspired by that, you know, the idea that, hey, stuff is getting picked up on Adult Swim and,
Oh, absolutely. I'm really, in fact, I mean, that's one of my goals is to resell Chilltown, and that's one of the things that I'm hoping for, you know. I'm gearing up for a big relaunch in the fall, and we're doing it in an exciting way. I don't want to talk about it just yet, but,
okay.
I'm really pretty psyched about it, and I'm starting to work on it. As a matter of fact, next week, I'm putting about 2 or 3 months into it. And that's one of my goals, is to get picked up, by television again. I think it's really exciting, and I think it's, like I said, it's an exciting and a scary time as well. But for somebody who's just an independent person, I mean, if you put something out there and if you work really, really, really hard, you might not sell a show, but people will find out about you.
Yeah. Now, what is scary about it? Because you said it's exciting and scary.
Well, it's scary because you're putting stuff out there and anybody can rip it off.
Oh, yeah, true.
You know, things are regulated, but not completely regulated. I'm in a position where I kind of put stuff out there, and as far as I know, nobody's ripped it off. I mean, the one thing about animation is you can't just decide to do it and just, you know, knock something off in a day. It's a really long time, no matter who you are. So I'm kind of protected in that sense. But there are a lot of, there are tons of companies that are kind of cropping up these online networks, and I've been, a lot of them have reached out to me, and some of them are really great and, you know, on the up and up, and a lot of them are incredibly unscrupulous. Mm. And it's, you know, it's hard to kind of filter through some of that. So that's another scary aspect of it.
Okay. Now, when I was looking up information about you, I was looking at pictures and stuff. If I'm not mistaken, you are a white lady, am I correct?
I'm mixed.
Mixed, okay.
I'm mixed, yeah.
So when people meet you, does it come across, they're like, oh, this person's mixed, or do they go, this person, like, how is your experience in life? How are you treated?
I'm treated most people think that I'm white, but quote exotic looking.
One of those people. Yeah, she's olive skin, if you know what I mean.
Kind of exotic looking.
She could pass.
People say, where are you from? And I'm like, well, I grew up in the Bronx. No, I mean, where are your parents from? You know, it's always one of that kind of thing. Most people who meet me, I look mostly, I guess, Italian or Latina, you know, and most people assume that that's what I am, but I'm not.
Yeah, like that was the thing is, I even when I wanted to ask the question, I was like, I assume, because I was looking at the pictures, I was like, because no offense, what Chill Town TV is so black, and I mean it in the good kind way. Like I watched it and was like, oh yeah, this is awesome. And I go look at the picture, I was like, this is Lisa. And I go back and watch some more Chill Town, I was like, Lisa did this. That's cool. That now, do you ever get any, like, do you ever get checked on that? Like, do people ever like get off on the wrong foot about it? Because it seems like something people would.
Oh, absolutely, for sure. I did a screening in December, and I came up there, and this lady said, "Well, what makes you feel that you can talk about the?" She said, "The quote demographic."
Whoa.
I was like, you know, I just didn't even want to get into like a whole kind of thing with her in public, you know, or have to justify who I am.
Yeah, because one, how do you do it to, you know, like, how do I justify my right to discuss something right. that is creative and comedic? You know what I mean? Right. That's my choice. Right. And then two, if I do dignify you with a response, then it kind of like puts me down. Like I'm having to, like you're on a higher level than me and I have to explain my way into your status. Like, fuck you.
Right. Yeah, exactly. So that's kind of my stance with all of that. I grew up, I had like a very dichotomous kind of upbringing in most respects. I grew up partially, part of my childhood up until I was 8 years old in a really super bad neighborhood, in the Bronx. I was on the fifth floor of a 5-floor walk up. I grew up like in the middle of hip hop culture when all of that stuff was going on, you know, and a lot of the greats were happening, you know.
Yeah, well, so I mean, it's your
even if I were white,
right?
I would feel that, you know, like just like a hip hop artist, I would, you know, that's something that shouldn't really be questioned,
right?
But I'm not. But it's so I don't know.
Well, also, well, there's a thing though, is like it's your culture. You know what I mean? Like you're still expressing yourself in the way that. In the ways that you've been influenced also, and I think everybody does that. So it's like when I do the show, sometimes people will be like, well, you don't talk like you're from the South. It's like, well, I fucking am. I don't know what else to tell you, you know? Like, that's going to be my point of view.
Definitely was my point of view. I mean, I grew up in the Bronx. I grew up like, you know, a certain type of thing. And that's what surrounded me aesthetically. I mean, every time when I went to school, I went on the subway and I was surrounded by graffiti. I was, you know, that was the music that I grew up listening to, you know?
Yeah.
So it's, that's what all my friends listen to.
Now, how much of your personal life leaks over into your work? Because, you know, I don't know if you're single, married, dating, whatever. But Lily's Ratchet Advice has a lot of dating and relationship advice, and I'm like, how much of this has happened to Lisa?
A lot of it has happened to me.
That's why it comes sound so authentic.
A lot of it, that's right. A lot of it has happened to me. Unfortunately, I say ripped from the headlines of my life. Unfortunately. And then just, you know, put on tilt a little bit. I'm single right now. I wasn't married, but I lived with somebody for a long time and definitely did the online dating thing when that was over. And, and right now I'm not even really looking to date anybody. I'm just focused on my project right now. I'm not even trying to date anybody. So I haven't been like recently doing an online dating thing, but the ones that I went on gave me enough material basically for 10 years.
Oh man. Cause I was just going to say if you ever get writer's block, are you like, man, I need to go on a date?
All I need to do is just go right onto one of these dating sites. In fact, one of the things that I did on Lele's Ratchet Advice was I created a profile for her, for the character, and I put it up on a dating site. and I made like a crazy, crazy kind of profile.
Avatar?
It was a cartoon. It was like just her picture as a cartoon character. I put her age, which is like, you know, 24, 25 years old.
Yeah.
I put that she, you know, what her job was, that she was in a cartoon, and that, you know, for things that she liked, I wrote like papaya, you know, pedicures, twerking. I mean, really crazy stuff, you know. And then, why you should contact me. If you have a paying job and don't mind dating a cartoon character. And so, and I made it pretty obvious that it was a cartoon character. And I put it up for 10 minutes. And within 10 minutes, I got 5 guys write to me. And one guy kept writing and he kept like instant messaging me like, you know, you want to go out. I really like to take you out on a date. And I'm like, I can't do that. And he's like, why? And I'm like, I'm a cartoon character, dude. I can't go on a date with you.
Sad part is.
And he was like, well, maybe later, maybe another time we could do it. And I said, dude, I don't exist. I don't exist. I can't do that.
He's like, maybe one day when you're not a fictional character, you just like go out with me sometime, you know?
Right, and I just took it down. I just took it down. In fact, one of the things that I'm planning and that's in the works is when I relaunch, I'm going to be doing a new Lele show every single week, which is a tough thing to do. It's a tough thing to like, kind of write, animate them, do it. But I'm gonna start writing a lot of them in advance and put all those out and I'm also planning a book, a Lele book. So
now when Lisa is out on a date. Right.
Yes.
And it's not going too well, right?
Yes. Please.
Are you automatically like, I could leave, but this is some good shit for Lele's Ratchet Advice?
Well, I don't know, because to be honest with you, I only started doing Lele's Ratchet Advice like in December, and I haven't been out on it. You know, I haven't done like an online dating thing since December. I've been just once this launched, I started working 7 days a week, about 12 to 17, 18 hours a day, just because promotion took such a huge amount of my time. And now I'm finally getting to a place where now that season one of Chilltown is over and Lele's is in hiatus until we gear back up again in the fall, I'm finally having a little bit of extra time. So I have not done that yet, but I'm pretty certain that I would. I'm pretty certain that even if something were terrible, I probably would, you know, just stay, you know, at least an hour later just to, you know, get more notes.
Yeah, I having a podcast, you know, there's conversations where like I'm at a gym or something like is crazy is happening to me as a customer at some restaurant or something, and I'm thinking to myself like, man, fuck this, I need to get out of here, I don't appreciate being treated like this. And then some little voice stops me, it's like, this is good material, don't leave yet. It's like, I guess I can stay for one more round and maybe they'll say something else.
I have like such crazy things happen to me. One time I was on the subway. I mean, I'm in New York City and I was on the subway And this guy gets on, and you could tell that he was a clown. Not just like, you know, I mean, just literally as like a job description, that's what he did. And he had like a whole bunch of, you know, like he had like a suitcase, and he had like, he was partially dressed that way. And I thought he was going to start doing some tricks or anything. But he sat down next to me, and he pulled out a paper, and he started talking, and he starts trying to get into a conversation with me. And he started talking about politics or something like that, and I answered him kind of briefly because I didn't want to really engage with him. And then he finally, you know, he said, well, you know, I'm a professional clown. And I was like, oh, really? You know, it wasn't hard to guess. And then he asked me out on a date, and I said, you know, I'm sorry, I can't date you, Mr. Clown. And so
he's like, why not?
I don't know, things like that, you know, it was just like crazy, crazy kinds of things like that always seem to happen to me. So maybe I'm a magnet for that. Mm. I don't know.
Now, in your mind, when this is happening, are you like imagining him showing up to the date in clown makeup and clown shoes or something?
And big floppy shoes.
Yeah, with a horn or a flower that squirts water in your face.
Yes, I was imagining that, and no can do.
Oh, poor clown dude, man. You got to lie about your occupation, man. I'm in children entertainment or something. I don't know.
He tried to give me his credits. I was on the Conan O'Brien show once. I'm like, yeah, all right. Still can't date you.
I don't even know how much clowns make. He could be like the richest dude ever. It's just, once you say you're a clown, it's...
Even money is not an incentive for me in terms of dating. It's more, you know, the quality of somebody's character and what they're doing with their life and stuff. And you know, not to besmirch the clown community, no disrespect to the clown community. But, you know... I don't think it's a match for me.
Well, they're a besmirchable group of people. You know, the other thing too, though, like I think money isn't necessarily, you know, the biggest deal either. But you know, when if you go on a date, the lack of money starts to pop out if it's like doesn't take care of the minimum. Like, you know.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I think that, you know, I mean, well, in these days and times, you know, there are a lot of reasons to be unemployed. And yeah. So, and, you know, you can't, in a way, you really can't fault somebody for that, you know? Mm-hmm. But I think that if you're trying to date, you have to at least have a certain amount of money to be able to pay for a drink and, you know.
You'll need use a Groupon if you got to, but as long as we both get full... And we leave here happy, man. I feel like that is the minimum amount of money required, you know, in the dating game. Anyway, in the dating game.
I agree.
So who are your like inspirations over this period of time? I mean, it's been 15 years. You had to be inspired by either people to get started or people along the way. And there's different success stories. So who inspires Lisa?
In terms of animation, there are a lot of inspirations of Warner Brothers, of like Looney Tunes, mm-hmm. are big inspiration, like Bugs Bunny, those types of cartoons, Simpsons, South Park, Beavis and Butthead, Ralph Bakshi is a big inspiration. In terms of writers, I'm a huge television fanatic, and I always have been. I'm an only child, and I grew up watching a lot of television. And I was lucky in one sense that, I mean, I grew up in New York City, and so they had all the real old school shows that, like, from the 50s and I guess 60s that were on in syndication when I was growing up, right around the time, dinner time, when it was dinner time. And I usually, my father worked really late, and so my mom would have dinner with him, so I sat and watched TV while I was eating dinner. And so I got to watch some really great shows like I Love Lucy and things that kind of taught me, I guess, formatting and the way real sitcoms should be written, you know, all the great shows. So I mean, it's kind of countless, plus real literature, people like Hemingway and, you know, real writers like that. I have a lot of Mad magazines, Spy magazine, going back into the, like, the 80s and 90s. And
yeah, I feel bad for the kids now because they grew up with no, like, ability to learn how to fold the back page of a magazine into a different image. You know?
That's right.
It's poor kids. That's
right. You know, I'll tell you something. There's a guy who lives in my building who took over Spy versus Spy. And so that's like one of the coolest things in the world to me. He's a really good cartoonist. He's like an underground cartoonist, and he has a underground comic called World War III Illustrated. His name is Peter Cooper, and one of the ways he pays the rent is he does the Spy versus Spy for Mad Magazine.
Wow, does he do the animated one on TV too? Because they have like their own show now. Okay,
no, he just draws it for the
So magazine. Wait, there's still is now is the magazine paper? Now is it online only? Like, how does
I don't know. I yeah. mean, to be honest with you, I haven't read it in a long time. I really haven't checked it out in a long time.
Yeah, I gotta get to a grocery store and check out that aisle again, because like when I was a kid, I read it religiously.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah,
for sure. I love and that. I mean, I even going back and I'm like I said, Spy magazine. Mm-hmm. Did you ever read that? That was really. I mean,
I don't know if I read Spy magazine. I think I was mostly Mad magazine, and there was one other one. Cracked. Yeah, Cracked was the mm-hmm. other one I read. Mm-hmm. As a kid, and I always, you know, it's funny though, because I always felt like those they were so clever and funny. And then, like, sometimes it wouldn't even, like, I went back and read some of it, and it's not even, like, extremely clever. It's just, like, some jokes never get old. Like, a good fart joke is mm-hmm. all, like, when it lands, no matter how mature you are as a human being, you're going to be like, well, there's a good fart joke. And, like, I would go back and it'd be like, Robocock? Holy shit, they did Robocock. See, it's what a COCK is like. Mm-hmm. Well, that's not the funniest thing, but it worked.
Yeah, I love that stuff. And I also love, I really am a big fan of underground comics, like stuff like Fantagraphics and people like Kyle Baker, people like Dan Klaus and Harvey Pekar, things like that. I love that. Those are kind of like personal stories that are told. And I think like for me, the bleeding of that or the merging of that with certain comedians like Richard Pryor, who's my all-time, you know, idol as a comedian, and or even more recent comedians like Dave Chappelle, who's also an idol of mine, and taking that kind of sensibility and trying to put it into what I'm doing.
Yeah, nobody ever brings up Dave Chappelle. Not enough people bring up Dave Chappelle. I think it's because he's still alive.
I love Dave Chappelle. I am such a huge Dave Chappelle fan.
Me too.
And I was lucky that two of the guys who did voiceovers for me worked on his show, Dante Nero and Will Savince. It was that to me was like, oh my God, they worked on Dave Chappelle's show.
Now, what about in just outside of, well, two questions. One, do you watch like anything like the stuff on Adult Swim or the mm-hmm. stuff on like Adventure Time or anything like that?
I definitely watch Adult Swim and no question, Aqua Teen Hunger Force is a huge influence on me. I love Aqua Teen Hunger Force, and I mean, in fact, one of the things that I consciously did when I first wrote Chilltown, I mean, I sold Chilltown as a series to BET, and BET never put it on the air, and that was the thing that kind of, the final thing that kind of inspired me to do it myself. And I hit one of the third episode of Chilltown was actually kind of like a shortened version of what my original pilot was for BET. Mm. And it's the only episode in Chilltown that really has a concrete kind of ending where, you know, like a typical kind of sitcom ending where at the end they kind of talk about what happened. Mm. But what I took for one of the things I took from Aqua Teen Hunger Force, which I love, was that it kind of just ends like in the middle of nowhere.
Yes.
And I love that because it's kind of, it's very, very exciting as a writer where things are settled, you know, things are settled in terms of the plot, but then it just kind of seemingly just ends in the middle of something.
Yeah, so I love
very,
that.
Very exciting. I love that.
Like, because it's, the other thing about when it ends that way is it's like ending on a joke punchline before the audience can clap, you
right.
know.
Mm-hmm.
It's like Carl says something wacky and it just the Aqua Teen song comes in and you're just like, oh, you know, like that. Oh, that was crazy. I almost did not get to laugh at that because it just ends, you know.
I love that show. I love that show. My ex-boyfriend and I used to argue about it all the time. He would talk about it, and he would talk about the characters, and he would say, and then there's Meatball. I'd say, he's not a ball. It's a meatwad.
Duh. And then you just knew. You're like, this isn't going to last. This is your fault.
You know? The writing was on the wall. You got to go.
You got to respect my Aqua Teen Hunger Force, baby. I'm sorry. My show that I watch now, well, I watch all of them pretty much, but my favorite show now is Squidbillies.
Mm-hmm. I like Squidbillies.
Yeah. The thing about Squidbillies, the reason I know that it's really clever is because none of the characters are really imitatable, because the writing on the show is the craziest shit ever, because they make up at least 25% of the words. Like, mm-hmm. I don't know how you get yourself in the mode where you're writing and you're just like, you know, instead of having Early say, we're going to go and fill up on gas, we're going to say, we're going to go filamentate. And you're like, filamentate? That's not even a fucking word. But it works when he's saying, like, you know, when he's putting it in a sentence, it works. So I respect their ability to think outside of the box much. Sure. Now, what about outside of animation? Do you have any, like, people that you watch there? Like, I know, you know, the series Awkward Black Girl, it was, like, a big inspiration to a lot of people.
I love that show. I love that. I really love that. And what Ether has done has definitely been incredibly inspirational. And it's very inspiring, you know, that she kind of did it herself, and she did that. And I think I really like that series a lot. So, there's tons of stuff outside of animation that I like. I like Mad Men on TV.
I've been watching that. I just started watching it like 3 or 4 weeks ago. And I'm already at like I think I'm watching the season 4 finale right now. The writing is so good.
It is. It really is. And I mean, unfortunately, these are shows that, you know, this is a show that just, you know, it just did its final episodes with 30 Rock. And I kind of slept on that a little bit at the beginning. And now it's in syndication. Once again, it's in syndication, because I tend to watch things late at night when I'm done working. Mm-hmm. And it's so well written. It's so good. I love Curb Your Enthusiasm. I love Louis C.K.'s show. I think his show is just brilliant. I like Girls on HBO.
Oh, I love Girls, man. I feel like, you know, the saddest thing about Girls was when people noticed that there were no black people on it, and then people got like mad about it. But I was like, she's writing her experience. She don't hang out with black people. Like, don't awkwardly force some blackness into something with no blackness. Cause I fight for creative people to be able to put their visions on the screen and not like another version of their vision. So it's like, if your world does not have a lot of black people in it, I don't want you haphazardly writing black characters into your show, because that actually might be offensive. Is like, well, we don't do that.
I absolutely agree. I mean, she is such an incredible inspiration to me also because of her honesty.
Yes.
It's a very tough thing as a writer to do that and just to be as honest as she is. I think it's just really brilliant. Mm-hmm. I love it. I liked her movie as well. So I really, really like it.
Especially to be that young. You know, because like,
it's unbelievable. Right. I know, it's unbelievable to be that connected and it's really, really unbelievable, because I think, I mean, at least for me, when I was that age, I felt like, I mean, I don't know, I guess in a way I felt like I knew it all, but I know that I didn't, you know?
Right.
I mean, but certainly as an artist, to be that connected, I know that I wasn't.
There's a maturity to her ability to put herself on display as the butt of the joke most of the time. Mm-hmm. And her friends to be like, we are silly, silly people who obsess about a bunch of stuff. But I identify with it, cause I'm like, well, I guess everybody at 24 thought everything was the end of the world, and every date was the biggest date, and every boyfriend, girlfriend was the love of your life. And it's so mature for her to be able to do that. And, you know, I fight for people to have their spaces so that you create this vision. And, you know, if you're able to, get people to dig it, that's cool. And same thing with Mad Men. Now I don't know, this might be a little different than most people who watch these shows now, and I would readily admit that I enjoy the shows because I hate everybody, and they put them out there so they can be hated. Like they don't try to like give a character a storyline of like, well, he's such a great guy, he has no conflict, he never does anything wrong, he's Clark Kent, he's Superman, he's right. You know, they put people out there and you can go, oh my God, Don, you are a cheating bastard and you're gonna lose your family. And part of me, when he loses family, is like, good, that's what the fuck happens when you treat your family like shit. And but you know, the story goes on and I'm able to still stay in the story because it's okay if I don't like him.
Right. I love that. And I as a writer, I'm really attracted to the gray area. And I hate when things are painted either broadly one way or the other. And it's always the thing that challenges me the most because, you know, I specialize in comedy and the ultimate thing for me is I always have to try and find the joke in something, but I'm always striving to do that gray area stuff. That's the area that Lena Dunham does so brilliantly.
Yes.
And also Mad Men, you know, that you know, you can see somebody who's like a sexy guy, who's got all of these, who's brilliant, but who's also like a dick, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, like,
yeah, I always think like the most beautiful thing is like there's levels of comedy, you know, levels of humor in people. And I'm attracted to that. Like, I'm attracted to funny people. And I always figured, like, you have your baseline level where it's like, nothing's funny. I'm serious all the time. And, you know, you see those people. And then there's people that think they're funny, but it's almost like they Google Calendar they're funny, you know?
Yeah.
It's like, you can laugh at me from 8 to 9:15, but after that, you know? But then there's, like, this other level where people are just like, you can laugh at me, you can laugh with me. You know, I'm not taking myself too serious. And I feel like that is the highest level and also the hardest to attain because, you know, you have to be so openly honest and raw about yourself and your own emotions to be able to be like, I went on 17 bad dates. Here's what's bad.
Right.
Here's what's funny
right.
about that.
You have to be able to say, I made a mistake. I slept with somebody who degraded me in a certain way. I mean, I thought it was one of the best scenes I've ever seen in my life was in Girls when it's in the episode where she's telling her ex-boyfriend who's gay that she thinks that he gave her HPV. And he tells her that he is gay and they go through this really funny type of scene and then she says, well, yeah, you know, I mean, I know what that's like. I'm dating a guy now and sometimes I let him punch me in the side of my body. It's just like such a horrible
right.
thing to say. And it was so honest. I mean, it's something that in real life, I mean, I've never been in that situation, but it's something that most people wouldn't have the guts to say, even to a good friend, you
yes.
know, if that were happening, because it's such a shameful thing to have happened to you, I guess. So
yeah.
It's so brilliant to write that.
It does take that scene to the next level. It's one of my favorite scenes
mm-hmm.
also. Now, another thing I want to ask, too. You're a woman in this industry. You're also, you know, a person of color. Do you ever feel like you meet any barriers or any obstacles that, you know, you wouldn't experience if you weren't?
Well, it's so, to some degree, yes, to some degree, no. I mean, mm-hmm. I spend a tremendous amount of my time basically just in my house.
Right.
So, I haven't experienced certain things just because I'm kind of secluded in a certain kind of way, because that's what happens when you're on the web.
Yes.
But definitely people make certain presumptions. I find that a lot of times I'm placed in a situation where I have to justify stuff a lot, which is really messed up, or people just assume things about me. One of the things that which is not, it hasn't hurt me in any way, but I definitely have found a number of guys who assume that I'm the Lele character.
Like in real life?
They assume that I'm that character, And I've had people who even have wanted to do business with me who have, like, assumed that I'm that character, which is just a kind
Wait, hold on. Lisa, you mean, like, they call you and, like, can I speak to Lele?
No, well, I actually did an interview. I'm not going to mention what show it is. I did an interview for a podcast, and the guy, the first thing the guy said to me says, "Wow, you don't sound anything like Lele." And I'm like, I'm like, "Yo, I'm not Lele. That's like a character."
Right.
And I mean, I don't know. I guess, and then even on that show, finding, you know, having to kind of justify, like, all of a sudden, like, race becomes a topic that, yeah, that wants to be discussed when, hey, I'm doing comedy. I'm happy to discuss that with you in a different type of forum, but I'm trying to promote my show. I'm not here. I'm not the person who's going to answer all of those questions for you, you know?
Yeah.
So I think that if I weren't, it probably would never come up. I don't think that, you know, like the people who do South Park, they're asked those types of, you know, topical types of questions and stuff. But,
right,
you know, so that, I mean, it's not insulting, but it's like, oh my God. I was on a radio show about 2 or 3 weeks ago, and this lady, who was, I guess, a friend of the host called in,
mm-hmm,
and she started talking about, you know, how she felt that there was no racial profiling. And, I mean, why are you talking about that
during
when I'm trying to promote my show? What's up with that?
Wow.
And so she wants to, like, make her case for the fact that she believes there's no racial profiling that's going on,
wow,
you know, in this country, which is, you know, patently absurd.
Yeah, I just, ironically, literally, the last 2 days, I've had a discussion with one of my friends, and he started it by, we were talking about Trayvon Martin, and he said, "I support racial profiling," and we have been battling ever since, because it doesn't make sense, and also, statistically, he can't prove his point, but just the idea that people like that exist bug me out.
It's very disturbing.
Yeah,
it's very, very disturbing.
But I wouldn't, but I wouldn't bring it to this interview, is what I'm saying. Like, I didn't go,
right,
Lisa, Trayvon Martin. Oh yeah, and Chilltown. Go ahead, whatever you want to talk about.
Yeah.
Sum up the case. You have 2 seconds, and
right,
then we'll...
Exactly. I know you're not an attorney, but still, yeah, you know.
And make it funny. Make it funny if you can. You know, people are here to laugh.
Right. That's kind of, I mean, so it's kind of crazy that, you know, all of a sudden, like, you're responsible for, like, answering the world's questions, you know,
yeah,
like, you're like Yoda, and so it's crazy.
Yeah, well, you know, like I said, when I saw your picture, I was like, this lady has picked to do something so black, and I, like I said, I mean it complimentary, like, black, I love blackness, you know what I mean? So it was just like, this is so black, I gotta ask her. What do people treat her like? Because I feel like, you know, appearance wise, they're going to be like, prove your blackness. How can
right.
you write this? How can you do this? You know?
Right.
It's
like I said, I haven't, for the most part, I haven't had, I've only had that happen one time. And
yeah.
part of the reason for that, I think, is because, I'd pretty much tell people exactly what I am right off the bat, so that
yeah.
way, you know, nobody can say anything. So I've learned my entire life that that's pretty much what I do. And that way I don't have to, you know, I kind of avoid that, you know,
yeah.
but.
Well, also there's an authenticity to the work, you know, so like, one of the things you were alluding to earlier, because the internet kind of does speak for itself, like the work now can speak for itself. I feel like sometimes the person behind the work doesn't matter as much to people. Not that it, you know, that's good and bad, obviously, but people are either like, I watched this 5-minute thing and I was entertained, or I watched it and I wasn't, you know, and the next step of, hey, who wrote this doesn't come until they were entertained, you know, and I feel like once you entertain somebody, they want to like you. So, you know.
Yeah, I happen to be one of these people where I like being under the radar. I'm not interested in celebrity very much. I really want to just kind of live my life, and I want
right.
to be able to just do the work that I'm doing and hopefully get paid to
yeah.
do it. And so I'm not interested in, you know, I'm interested, I mean, and that's one of the reasons I guess I chose doing what I'm doing versus being an actor and being somebody who's in front all the time. And most of the time, most people, even somebody like Shonda Rhimes, who's wildly, wildly successful, there's some people who know who she is, but right. The vast majority of people just enjoy her shows. They just know that they love Scandal, and they know that they love Grey's Anatomy and The Practice and all of these shows, and they don't spend that much time thinking about Shonda Rhimes. Yeah. And to me, that's like kind of perfect for me, you know?
Yeah, no, I agree. I've always said I just want to be famous enough to sign some titties. That's it. Like,
yeah.
That's the perfect amount of fame. I don't want people recognizing me anywhere. I don't want, I like to go eat me a good meal and no one come over. That, I just, matter of fact, I would take the money and you keep the fame. Not just take the money from doing
I'm
what I love.
I'm not interested in the fame whatsoever. And so, it's a better thing for me. So I think because of that, I'm not one of these people. I don't take my picture all the time. I don't post it all the time. I'm not trying to be that person. I'm not trying to brand myself. I'm trying to brand my shows. And so I've avoided certain things as a result.
But when something is like getting looked at to be picked up by TV, do you have to physically go in and meet with people and stuff?
Oh, for sure.
Okay.
For sure.
Okay.
For sure.
So that's a little different.
And then I bet it doesn't really make one bit of difference in that situation. It doesn't make one bit of difference.
Okay. Yeah. That's what I was wondering is if people, you know, because also I think being a woman,
they just care about whether they have a show that's good and they can make some money off of it. They don't care about anything else.
Okay. Yeah. Because I also figure that being a woman and being funny, I think sometimes dudes don't react well to that. Like they get, I don't know, challenged or some shit. Where
No. I think that it's a good thing. I mean, because first of all, a lot of people who you meet with are women, and I mean, for the most part, being funny, people want to work with people who they feel they can be friends with, and who they feel that they, you know, they can relate to in a certain type of way. And if you're a funny person, then they feel that, you know, okay, this is a person who I, you know, can come in and make some jokes and I can hang out with and have a good time around. And I think that that's usually what people think when you go into a meeting. That's been my experience, is people just kind of want to say, okay, I want to be able to hang out with this person.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Like I said, I was just wondering, cause I know in stand up and stuff, you know, people have, like a lot of times women have different experiences, and I was like, I wonder how it is in animation. And I wonder how it is when you're responsible for your own stuff. So you don't have so much of a, you know, a corporate structure over you all the time.
I mean, one of the things I have noticed, and I think is true, and truthfully, I mean, I haven't been out there pitching anything since I started working on this, and it's a long time. It's like almost like an eternity. It's 5 years. It's a huge amount of time.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm hoping that this has changed, but that typically if you're pitching a show that has people of color in it, or it's a predominantly black show,
mm-hmm.
then a lot of times people say, well, we already have a black show.
Okay.
And so you definitely get a lot of that. And I mean, I've gotten that even from things where deals have been made. And, well, you know, we have a black show, but, you know, I mean, they kind of look at, okay, well, we can have, like, this one black show.
Right.
But again,
one at a time.
I don't know if things have changed. I have no idea if things have changed since I've done it. And like I said, I've been pretty fortunate in what's happened for me. So,
It does. But it does seem like that. It does seem like there's a limit because, like, Comedy Central – they had Dave Chappelle show, then they had Chocolate News, then they had Key and Peele, but they've never had like Key and Peele and Chocolate News or Dave Chappelle and Key. Like it's always just like one or the other. Same thing with Adult Swim. You know, they went from Boondocks to Black Dynamite. But there's never really been, you know, two or three black shows on it. And I think they're starting to branch out a little bit more because like Eric Andre has a show now.
Eric Andre did voiceovers for me.
Word?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Eric Andre did voiceovers for me. Yeah, he's a great guy. He's really, really talented. I have another show that hasn't even dropped yet because I'm focusing on Chill 10 now. It's another show, and it's actually a more political show. It's called The Danger Squad, and he's the lead in that.
Oh.
And, yeah, he's, I cannot tell you how ridiculously talented this guy is. It's unbelievable. I mean, and now, you know, he's got his show where he bashes furniture on top of his head.
Oh, I love it.
Yeah, he's hilarious. He's a hilarious comedian, but he's also a brilliant actor. And people, I mean, once things start really, really, really blowing up for him, people are going to be surprised because, I mean, it was unbelievable working with him. He came in. He was another person I just cold contacted. He was like, yeah, sure, you know, I'd like to do it. He came in and auditioned for me because I was auditioning people. I hired him right on the spot. I was like, I was just blown away. He just came in and read, and his reading was stuff that he not only did things perfectly, but he brought so much stuff that I never even thought of to this role. In terms of like inflection and stuff, I was like, oh my God, I'm like in the presence of somebody who's just like on a whole other kind of level in terms of acting. I've been just incredible. I was incredibly lucky to work with him.
Now,
he's also a super nice guy. He's a really nice guy.
And is this in your apartment that he's recording this?
Yeah.
Because I think we've also talked to Victor Varnado on our show, who did the Awkward Comedy tour.
Yeah,
and
he's a part of that.
And I'm impressed by him and you for the same reason, is that y'all let Eric Andre in your house after.
let me tell you something. I contacted him again through his MySpace page. And before he came to my house to audition, I just Googled him. And this was like a half hour before he was supposed to show up and audition. And I found some video on YouTube with him dressed just in his underwear, running around on this stage where this fat lady was like splayed out on a couch and like crazy free jazz was playing, and Eric Andre had like this crazy fur type of vest on and he was naked except for his underwear, and he had salt and he had ketchup and mustard canister things, and he was squirting them inside his underwear.
Yeah, you're like, he's coming over in 30 minutes.
And I was like, oh my God, I can't believe this guy's coming to my apartment. Oh my God, what did I do? And I'm like, I might need to padlock the refrigerator. But, you know, he's a totally cool person. He's funny. He's really, really funny. But he's a totally cool person.
Yeah, I have to talk to him at some point. I had to get him on the show because I was just like, whenever I hear people are like, yeah, I know Eric Andre, I'm like, and he's been in your house. Yes. I'm like, wow, that is amazing. You saw all the videos too? Okay. All right.
Yeah. And one thing that, one thing that a lot of people don't know about Eric Andre was he's been at it for a really long time. He was even homeless at one point because, I mean, he was trying to make it as a comedian. He's a musician. He went to Berklee School of Music and, like a talented musician. He decided he wanted to do stand up and it took him a really long time because he does all stand up and, you know, that's popular now, but it wasn't popular for a while. Mm-hmm. And, so some of the stuff he was doing was really unorthodox. And even though people knew him, like he did Aspen, which is a really big, you know, comedy festival, he did certain things. He still wasn't getting paid that much money. And so he was just, you know, running around doing all of this stuff. And I was just so thrilled when things just kind of started really blowing up for him when he got the Adult Swim show, and then, you know, he was cast in Don't Trust the Bee in Apartment 23, and, you know, and a few other things. It was really thrilling because he's such a nice person and so talented. He so truly deserves it. It's a great thing to see. In fact, he came to my house a year ago to do some, you know, to just do a couple of extra lines and stuff, and he happened, you know, we just coordinated it when he was in New York. And it was great to see him. It was really great to see him.
Oh,
you know?
Man, that's cool, man. It's good when good stuff happens to good people.
Yeah, for sure. And I even he did an interview, and I heard I guess about a year ago he was talking about his show. He's saying that things were so bad for him. He had moved out to L.A. He was trying to make it there, and you know, he had big representation, but he still was trying to make it. And he had said on the show that his father had, you know, he had had to call up his dad and ask for money for, like, his car note, and, you know, which is a horrible thing to have to do. And literally, like, a week later, he got word that he not only got the show on Adult Swim, but also that the pilot for NBC was picked up. So that was incredible, incredible. And he so deserves it. I can't wait for people to see what he does in my show, and as well as other things that are coming up for him. Because, yeah, believe me, he's already starting to blow up, but he's really going to blow up.
Well, I'll definitely be checking for it. And that's awesome that you guys will be working together. Last thing, have you ever tried your hand at, like, anything on stage, like stand up, music, anything like that?
I have, not stand up, but music. When I was 15 years old, I used to play keyboards, and I spent some time in the music business, and, you know, when I was a teenager. And in fact, that's how a lot of Chilltown takes place in the music business, and because a lot of those experiences are things that I saw firsthand and stuff. So I definitely did that, but I never did stand up. A lot of people, because I write comedy and stuff, a lot of people would say you should do stand up, but I just never really had the guts to do it. Like I said, I'm more of a behind the scenes kind of person, so I just don't have the guts to do stand up.
Yeah, it seems like the thing about stand up is it seems incredibly hard for so little reward. You know what I mean? Like, incredibly hard. Like, whenever people talk to comedians, or whenever people say stuff like, "Oh, Rod, you're funny, you should be a comedian," I always am like, "Oh, you don't know anything about comedians." Like, cause I'm not driving, like, to the middle of nowhere, South Carolina on a Tuesday to do 15 minutes that I may or may not get paid for, and it
that
probably
somebody's
won't.
Somebody's gonna throw something at your head.
Right, and it's probably not enough money to, like, fill my gas tank to go back home. Like, I don't love it like that. I'm sorry, but I like money more than that, and I also like my apartment more than that. So,
well, to me, it's not about the money at all. It's just about the I don't have the guts to just be up there, and you know, it's just like, it's kind of like you leave yourself open to just have people just hate on you all the time.
Because you're in New York, right? For you, it's not even necessarily travel. You could, like, go hit up a club right now if you wanted to.
I mean, there's tons of open mics, and I mainly work with comedians, and I've been to a million of those things, but it's tough. You know, if you fail, it's you mean, you see it immediately. It's a hard thing to take. It's a hard.
What about what about, like, YouTube comments and stuff? Can it be any worse than that?
Well, it's in person. I'd say it's worse than that. I mean, YouTube comments don't bother me that much. I've gotten a couple of trolls, and, you know, I've been lucky I haven't gotten that many, but I have gotten them. They don't bother me that much.
Okay. Yeah, I just felt like having a show with so many black characters and knowing YouTube, that the response would just be nigger, 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 because, you know, that's what they do.
Well, I haven't. I'm lucky I haven't.
Oh, okay. Well, look, maybe hopefully more people are going to become aware of the show, and it's going to get bigger and bigger. And you'll be getting called nigger too in no time. And, you know, that's all we can hope for.
I'm waiting for it. I'll know I've made it. Yeah. I've really made it.
They hate me. They really hate me.
They really hate me.
Well, Lisa, it's been a pleasure. Thank you for joining us on Medium Talk.
Thank you so much. It's been my pleasure. I had a great time.
Yep. Everybody check her out at Chilltown TV on everything. She, you know, I have all the links to her, everything on the site. Thank you guys for listening to Medium Talk with Rod on the Black Guy Who Tells Premium Network. Peace.